Get your day started with a breakfast full of positive music, fun, inspiration, and so much more. Rise and shine with Fel and DJ. Weekday mornings on Vision. Life, culture, and current events from a biblical perspective. 2020 with Neil Johnson on Vision.
As we do on a Thursday, we like to check in with Family Voice Australia and those big issues that are shaping our nation today. A special welcome to Daryl Budge, who is Family Voice State Director for Western Australia, and he's also President of the Coalition for the Defence of Human Life. Daryl, a special welcome on to 2020.
Thank you, Neil. It's good to be with you.
Daryl, so many listeners will be familiar. Family Voice, a strong advocate for marriage and family. And so there is a necessary focus on addressing the rise of a very strong transgender agenda. Let me ask you about a new study that seems to contradict the transgender narrative and suggests that puberty blockers for young people actually spike youth suicide. What are your thoughts here, Daryl?
Yeah, that's right. The Heritage Foundation, American Foundation, looked at the data from the CDC and the states that are actually allowing access to puberty blockers and cross-sex hormones for young children without parental consent. And in those states, they found approximately a doubling of youth suicide rates. So they particularly looked at ages 12 to 23. And they found that in those states where it was easy to access, youth suicide didn't go down and actually went up. And that's a very interesting result.
So there's a contradiction in here. Your thoughts on that contradiction, because the rainbow activists, they claim that gender-confused children need radical medical intervention, but there's something in that sort of study that is an absolute contradiction to that, isn't it?
Indeed, yes. And that's an objective look at things. Obviously, we don't have a control group, and so they looked at the older ages, 24 to 36 age group, and there was basically a suicide rate went down in that age group. So it's basically saying that suicide has actually increased as this transgender agenda has been increased in those particularly liberal states in the US. So that obviously means that here in Australia, we really need to think very carefully. We need an inquiry at a national level about the massive increase that's going on. The other side of politics would argue that minors are not actually getting access to surgery in Australia, but even that is actually happening as well. We know that courts are ordering minors to be able to have access to this. Parents are trying to oppose it, and courts are giving access to minors in Australia too. And we know that minors are getting access to cross-sex hormones from very young ages, even younger than 12. So this is something that really needs to be examined at a national level.
You know, Daryl, there are some confusing messages out there, aren't there? Because there is this sort of argument that sometimes you'll hear that if you don't affirm these children and young people in this transgender narrative, that if you don't give them the puberty blockers, that somehow or other they're going to be bullied or however that will happen and increase suicide. But this is a contradiction to that part of the narrative as well. Any thoughts from you here?
Yes, that's right. We need far more care and counselling for these people. Even people at Westmead Children's Hospital, the counsellors and psychologists at that hospital put out a paper. You've probably heard much about this one. There's about five researchers that did a very extensive paper and said, look, we know that there's these comorbidities, there's these things that we're not able to examine properly. We need to examine them much more closely. So there's objective pushback coming from within their own medical community here in Australia. We know that they need more. And there's huge amounts of concern from the Tasmanian side. Even the Tasmanian Medical Association has said, we're very concerned about this idea. We're going to block access to kids to proper counselling, and they're saying we need to make sure we pull back from these extreme moves in Victoria and Tasmania from giving access to kids to proper counselling and being able to know exactly all the risks and actually be able to say, no, I'm not ready for that yet. But counsellors and psychologists are going to be blocked from even offering that good advice to kids. And for Christians and people that want to offer that good counselling, you know, Victoria is kind of taking the world lead and has the most extreme interventions against just good advice. And so we want to see that stopped and want to see kids getting proper care that they should, Christian care, but also just proper medical care.
Well, we know something is dreadfully wrong when governments are legislating that not even your doctor or a counsellor can tell kids the truth. And so this confusion in young people when they need support, and these are the ones who have the compassion of the Christian community, because it seems to be that it's only the Christian community that's standing up and saying doctors and counsellors need to be able to tell children the truth, and governments ought not to be legislating that. Hey, Daryl, you're in fact calling for an urgent inquiry into the treatment of gender-confused children in Australia.
That's right, yes. So we've been calling for that for the last couple of years at the very least, that we need an urgent national inquiry. Greg Bondo, we wrote to him. He's kind of fobbed it off to the States for quite some years. Sorry, not Greg Bondo, the previous health minister, Greg Hunt, he fobbed it off for ages and said the States should do the examination, but we think that's not good enough. We think the Albanese government should definitely institute a national inquiry into these things, and it should be an independent inquiry, independent of some of the very somewhat compromised medical community sections that have taken control and written white papers and medical papers and standards of care that very much suit their own agendas, that I think we might say are driven by profit rather than by care. So we really would like to see those things changed and turned around and a national inquiry begun.
Well, I'll give the Family Voice website in just a few minutes at the end of our conversation for listeners who might want to connect with Family Voice and be a part of whatever push there is on for that urgent inquiry into the treatment of gender-confused children in Australia. Hey, I'm going to be following this through a little later in the program in perhaps more detail around schools chaplaincy, but there was an announcement just last Friday from the new Education Minister, Jason Clare, around issues of school chaplaincy. What are your thoughts on what's happened so far as this new move, Daryl?
Yes, well, it does reflect a policy that Labor had when they were in government previously. But what it does mean is that schools will be under a lot of pressure now that there's this option that the $60 million is available to just get a secular social worker instead. Schools that have had really good care from these chaplains, over 3,000 schools have continued to be part of this program. They have great pastoral care from these counsellors, and they're very well qualified, not just a certificate four, but over 74% of them actually have much higher qualifications in related areas. So we see that this chaplaincy program has delivered a lot. So we had a commitment. Greg Bonder, our New South Wales State Director, had a commitment from Labor prior to the election, the paraphrase is that the Labor strongly believes that every student should have access to wellbeing support they need. Our priority is making sure students have the support they need at school so they can focus on learning. Labor values the staff who play a key role in student welfare, and students' wellbeing is vitally important. And they committed to this change, but it's interesting that they really do think that students' wellbeing is very, very important. I think that students should be properly exposed to these values and care and professional care that chaplains provide. And social workers are available in many other fields. There's already career counsellors and things like that at schools that are funded in different ways. And we think the chaplaincy programs are very important. We'd like to see the Education Minister commit to upholding his pre-election promise that he really believes in student welfare, and that that there is proper access to a chaplain at schools, and that schools won't be put under pressure by activists just to institute a social worker that's not at all religiously motivated. And I think that religious motivation is extremely important for students to understand that there are some things that they can't learn by mere rational examination, but there's got to be a deeper look at the bigger questions about life. And that's what students are really struggling with right now.
Removing that spiritual dimension actually makes a huge difference. Hey, just reflecting that when they implemented this national chaplaincy program, and I think that was in the Howard years, Labor was consistently a bipartisan supporter of the chaplaincy program.
Right.
And so is it at all disturbing at this point that there is what might appear to be a watering down, and the thought that, well, let's displace some of those Christian chaplains and get some secular welfare counsellors in place? Thoughts from you here, Daryl? Is it a watering down? Is there something to be concerned about here? Are chaplains likely to be losing their jobs?
Yes, it's likely that some chaplains will lose their work. However, I really do believe that if the Christian community can speak up about the value that these chaplains provide, the chaplains themselves are recognised for their extremely great work. I mean, there was a survey just a couple of years ago instituted by the Department of Education. They commissioned it and they said, let's do a national survey. They found a huge amounts of parents. Over 80% of parents love the program. So 70-80% of principals love the program. And there was about 500 parents that responded, and over 70% of them loved the program. So there was a huge positive response to it back in 2018. So the fact that this call is coming from the Labor government reflects that it's this small part of, tiny part of the community is have this activist motion against Christian values in the public square, and they just want to see that censored or removed in whatever way possible. But we see over 3,000 schools love the program and they want to see it continue, I would think. So we as Christians need to speak up for that.
And following that up a little more and perhaps some more detail with Scripture Union in a conversation coming up just over an hour from now on 2020. Hey, let's get a thought or two. Big one that's, you know, it's actually shocked some people. The Greens leader, Adam Bandt. You're describing him as un-Australian and anti-family because he doesn't want to be seen in the same frame when he's on television standing next to our Australian flag. What are your thoughts here, Daryl?
Right. Our Australian flag is a unity symbolic symbol of our stance together as saying we are one nation, one people, and we love each other and we both all have equal value under this common national flag. And there are some sections of the community who find that this nationalistic idea is terrible, but nationalistic values are uniting values of what our country stands for, and our flag kind of carries that banner, I guess you could say. And so for the Greens MP, Adam Bandt, the leader of his party, to say he doesn't stand by the Australian flag and is ashamed of the values that our flag have come to represent, in a sense. So therefore, I think really Anthony Albanese in the Australian Parliament should move against such a move, that the Australian flag should be part of every press conference. And we're calling for the Australian flag protocols to be reinstituted at a parliamentary level, that they should be flown in a position that's not flown in a position that's inferior to any other flag or ensign. And so the Australian flag is meant to be that unity symbol. And when somebody who's particularly a politician is wanting to fly another flag in a superior position, they're introducing subversively some alternative values that these other flags might represent. And that's why I think it's quite dangerous as a community. And that's why people are saying it's un-Australian. And we believe it's un-Australian too.
I think reflecting on those debates that have happened over the years, sometimes debates about the flag and whether we should keep the flag or whether the Union Jack should be taken out of the corner, all those sorts of things that have been debated, oftentimes, Daryl, that actually strengthens community attitudes to the flag. Usually it backfires. But when you've got a member of parliament that is pushing these things, we sort of expect, don't we, our members of parliament, that when they're elected to serve the people of Australia, that they might set the best example and make sure that the Australian flag is something that's honoured.
That's right. You'd think that our politicians representing the people in which that have elected them, that they want to stand by and affirm and even to speak strongly of the values that they do really enjoy and promote in Australia. But in a sense, we're seeing them promoting this divisive attitude of saying, we're going to stand under some completely other flag and trying to divide Australians. And I think that's un-Australian, and it is potentially anti-family as well. And Adam Bandt and the Greens Party represents many other quite concerning values. They want to institute complete full medical care coverage for people who want to institute extreme sex surgery, but as if that would actually be able to alter their gender. And so he wants the Australian community to fund all of that as well. So the Greens Party has some very concerning values. I think they would be in opposition to the family values that we as a country have been come to know for, and I think we would like to see that change. I'd like to see at least a motion in Parliament to be speaking against this, and as well as a changing of the regulations. And I think the Australian people would really like to see that change of regulations, that the Australian flag wouldn't be demoted in an official capacity by any politician.
I think virtually every commentator on this program that ever talks about the Greens recognises the extreme nature of some of their particular policies and the things that they do push. Hey, there are some Australian flag protocols, and I guess in every community, every now and then, you've got to be reminded of the flag protocols and how you fly the flag and, you know, what's higher than any other. Are you familiar with any of those protocols, Daryl?
Yeah, that's right. So as I mentioned earlier, that there is in those protocols that the those flags should be flown in a superior position to the Australian flag. So they can be flown alongside it, but if any other flag is flown in a position that promotes it above the Australian flag, that protocol says this should not be done. Now, this is not legally binding yet on Parliament, but I think Parliament should see that that's done. It's interesting that the Australian community would be so excited about putting a flag up on the Sydney Harbour Bridge that represents our community's values regards to the Aboriginal community. And they're really excited to see that those values or that particular move about the Uluru Statement and things like that promoted. And at the same time, we see the Australian flag being demoted. And I think that's very interesting. It shows you how powerful flags are in terms of representing a certain selection of values and what they stand for. So flags are quite important in our community. They represent our values and who we are. They're symbolic standard that we have about what our country stands for, I guess.
Wonderful stuff, Daryl. Hey, just one more. I'm not sure whether you're across the detail, but the significant life to honour today, some listeners will remember the outspoken faith and family advocacy of Mrs. Rona Joiner. You familiar with Rona Joiner, Daryl?
Unfortunately, I'm not. I must not be as widely read as yourself.
Okay, well, just a little note here, and I just wanted to include this, and perhaps, you know, you might reflect, and I might just spark your memory here. She passed away peacefully at home last weekend after a short illness, and her funeral's being held today at Burpengary in Queensland, and her burial will be at Deception Bay. Well, the family let us know Rona had reached the grand old age of 99 and a half years, and her health took a significant downturn over the last 2 or 3 weeks, which saw her spend 6 days in hospital due to an aspiration chest infection. Now, the family received some very kind words from Christian political lobbyists, and let me just read some of these kind words that were spoken from those colleagues that work in different Christian advocacy circles. Wendy Francis from the Christian Lobby said, "Rona Joiner cared deeply for the welfare of our nation's people, and in particular for women and children. With her passing, we've lost a significant warrior for good." Earlier this year, at 99 years of age, Rona joined a protest against euthanasia laws outside Queensland's Parliament. She'll be missed, but her unwavering commitment to truth and life has inspired many others who'll carry on her work. Lyle Shelton, who you'll be familiar with, and he's got a new role these days with the Family First Party, and we'll be following through some things like that, but he's reflected on Rona Joiner. He said, "Rona Joiner's courageous and persistent voice for life, marriage and family is sadly no more. As an activist and political aspirant, she kept putting herself forward despite the odds. Her fight for the dignity of young women was 40 years ahead of the Me Too movement. And similarly, she'll be vindicated as being on the right side of so many other issues since society comes to when society comes to its senses. Her life is an example to the rest of us to never give up." She was a wonderful advocate and really was in her prime, probably before you and I were even interested in the whole political scene, Daryl. She was around doing stuff back in the 70s and the 80s. So, yes, a woman of God standing up for the family, and those sorts of people need to be honoured. Daryl, any just thought to add there?
Yeah, my thoughts are there are some great champions of the faith and of life values in Australia. And as I appealed, every year we hold our Rally for Life here in Perth, and I often appeal to the crowd and say, there's some of you here in this crowd that can join these champions, and we honour some of those champions at the rally every year. And I just want to ask if there are any people who want to think about joining this particular fight in whatever capacity they can, whether they want to become doctors or they want to become advocates or they want to become just carers and psychologists and nurses and whatever else they can to serve people in a way that Christian care, but also speaks up boldly in the public square. And I think we as Christians, and like what this lady has done, is speak boldly into the public square and not be afraid, and to speak like Daniel into a hostile environment at times, but not be afraid from the pushback that comes from that. And you see that God will honour those people, and Christians really recognise what a wonderful work they do, and we thank for what she's done in her life. Yeah, so it's just great to have those champions that we can look up to and follow in their footsteps.
Sometimes we think some of the great advocates for family and for faith have only just arisen in the last decade. But here's a lady who began her advocacy, her activism, way back in 1969. And so just honouring Rona Joyner today, and she died on the weekend. It is her funeral today, and our condolences to the family. Hey, Daryl, let me point people to the Family Voice website. Following through on some of these campaigns and issues you've got going, familyvoice.org.au, familyvoice.org.au. Daryl Budge is Family Voice State Director for Western Australia and also President of the Coalition for the Defence of Human Life. Daryl, thanks so much for your update today on 2020.
Thank you, Neil. God bless you.
Thanks for taking time to listen to this audio on demand from Vision Christian Media. To find out more about us, go to vision.org.au.